So, Naomi, how much time do we have? 10 minutes? Okay. Tracy, I wanted to ask you a question first, just because it was fresh in my mind. With all of the large network of projects and initiatives that you presented about, the question that comes up for me is sort of entry points. Here today we have a large group of people who are, taking a lot of initiative in creating projects and forming organizations, planning events. And what are the entry points for us and similar communities around the world to sort of connect with those projects you're describing? And then on the other side, what are the entry points for those projects to take advantage of the capacity that we're building here? And how can those two groups meet up to create something more?
I think first they need to recognize each other. I don't think they know each other. There's very, very little. When I go to the scientific conferences, very, very few open data people appear at those conferences. When I go to the open data people, I see very, very few scientists. I see some geometricians a little bit, but not actively engaged in these things. So I think part of it has to do with the open data community having come from more of the cultural side of things. So if we think of Creative Commons, it comes from cultural products, media products, songs, and so on. And so the energy that emerged from there and the practices that came from there are a little bit ahistorical in how they do things. It's almost, when I observe it, it reminds me of the discussions of spatial data infrastructures 20 years ago, like when people were just starting up and when people were just getting excited about things. And it's great, but I think now we're getting to a maturity level where we have to say, oh, wait a minute, somebody has come before us. Somebody has done all of this work already before. Somebody has already done this thinking. Let's sit back a little bit and maybe let's start inviting these people to our events and start collaborating a little bit more together. The other side is that the scientists are snobby a little bit on this front. They're going, oh, these kids, look at what they're doing. They're reinventing the wheel. They're not listening. They need to be a little less arrogant and I think willing to sit down and listen. I mean, Edward's here, so Edward knows how impatient I get sometimes. And I realize that I shouldn't be impatient with the open data movement because it's got its own energy and its own trajectory. And that's fine. And I have to accept that it came from a different place. But now I think we actually are at a point where we have enough cities, at least in Canada, we have two provinces, and we have our federal government that I think is not going in a particularly great direction on the open data front, certainly not the open government and transparency front of things. And I think if we start working together a little bit more with scientists, we can move forward. Now, we also have a new movement in Canada called the Death of Evidence, or science censored, science uncensored. So I think that's an interesting, perhaps interesting point of convergence where I think the scientists will find it very, that group of scientists and engaged scientists might find it very interesting to work with the open data advocates because the open data advocates are better communicators than the scientists. So I think that I'm speculating here, but I think it's an interesting space now and an interesting time where we might be able to get epidemiologists, statisticians, census people, biologists, and all the microbiologists who are involved on the death of evidence stuff to actually work together. So that I think would be very exciting and throw some geometricians in there. Yeah.
Corey, you spoke about the R programming language, and that's something that has emerged over maybe 3 decades of history of evolving a language for statistical, doing statistical work. But really, there's a community and a culture behind that, and one that elevates sophistication of analysis. But people are working together really well. So I'm wondering if you can give us a little bit more background about how did that culture develop? Because I think that's something that the open data community can learn from in terms of how to just create the kinds of outputs that we're seeing from that particular community.
Yeah. So I think. I mean, in a word, I would say it's the openness of the analysis platform itself. So open data is going to dovetail nicely with open tools through which to derive insight from that data. And so having it open and having all this community development is obviously, it's kind of a self-catalyzing process. So once you get a bunch of people developing interesting add-ons to a base language or a base tool, then people realize, oh, that's really cool. It's got a lot of the things I want to do. And then they realize, well, but I want to do something a little bit different. And they recontribute back, and it kind of grows on itself. And in fact, you can see that if you look at R, it has a central archive for their all the add-on packages. And if you plot the number of packages available on that archive over time, it's an exponential curve. So it does seem to me to be a self-catalyzing process. Mm-hmm. But another aspect I think that's also important is we talk about openness, or that it's free in terms of that you can redistribute it, you can change it, you can get into the source code. But it's also free in another important sense, which is that it's gratis. It's accessible to everybody, regardless of financial means. So institutional scientists all the way down to just hobbyists who have access to these tools. I think that the size of that community just builds on itself.
Right. Mm-hmm. So there's like a critical mass, and that creates a momentum of its own, and that's why it seems that R as a statistical language is overtaking a lot of commercial tools that have been around for much, much longer. So it's an interesting case to look at. Petco. So semantic web and linked open data have been around for a while, and they've been sort of slow to pick up on the web, and maybe that's because it hasn't reached the kind of critical mass that other things have.
Right.
And I think part of that comes from an awareness of what types of applications can be created using this kinds of stuff. Like, we see these networks of information, then we see that they can be connected, and that a computer agent or a program, an app, whatever, could use that kind of graph to do reasoning. But how is that going to make an application more useful? An application useful for a person. What is that going to bring to the table, and how could that relate to the open data world?
Okay, I had quite a few examples on my slides. If I can, yeah, I'm just okay. Go ahead. Start again. Sorry. It's an academic way of presenting. Yeah. Sorry. Yeah. So I had one example here for people from life sciences. So linking the open data about drugs, or LODD, where the first D stands for drug. So it's an ongoing activity since 2008, and Canada is pretty much involved. There are people in Ottawa and people in Laval, in Quebec City, I think, who participate in that. The goal was to gather and interlink some data sets about drugs, published by the pharmaceutical companies, published by the government. Think about pharmacovigilance. People would publish all the data about adverse drug effects, adverse drug effects when you take something like Tylenol and then you start vomiting. Okay, so not nice things. And the idea is, through the interlinkedness of the data, provide answers to some non-trivial questions that will be difficult, if impossible, to provide without the interlinking infrastructure. For example, I put only two communities of stakeholders in this development, but there can be many others, including the government and, of course, the pharmaceutical companies. So, for example, for physicians, the kind of questions that can be answered and that can bring value are which equivalent drugs for a given condition can be prescribed. Okay, so they're just typing on here. Laptop, this kind of question, of course, this is the end goal. We are not there with graphic user interfaces and understandable languages. For the time being, querying RDF data is quite a hurdle using Sparkle or comparable languages, but still this is, I think, pretty much feasible in the future. Another question will be what drugs are currently in the clinical trial? Yeah, just for physicians, or as a patients or just citizens, we can ask things like, what are the alternatives of prescribed drug? Can we have another one if this one is not suitable? Or what are the contraindications, for particular drug? So this is one kind of application. Okay, if we have time for a second round of question, I can put
I think we should open up to the audience.
Okay, then I can just put my other slides. About a nice application that people can think of And I can explain if somebody wants some details about that. Okay, now?
Yeah.
Ah, great. So, it was asked by the audience. So this is a recommender system developed for digital humanities type of data, or more precisely, this is cultural heritage, management of huge collections, described by semantic metadata. Okay, so this is how we imagine it could work for somebody who is registered, who has a profile in the system, and wants to be suggested some content while being on the go. So this is context-aware mobile computing and using the web of data. Okay, so. Thank you.
I think we have time for one question, and a hand is up.
The question is actually for Petco. So this open data link, not the open data, sorry, linked data and RDF places a really big burden on content producers to annotate all their information with this. So in particular, say my little brother or sister wants to make a website about whatever they're interested in, then they're in the situation where either they have to go and learn about RDF triples and objects and predicates and subjects and namespaces, or they're outside of the linked data world. Have you given any thought to this, like, kind of isolating aspect of the whole thing?
Okay, I think I had a slide for that. Sorry, but I can't help it. Okay, have you heard about RDFA? So this is a way to serialize RDF within HTML text. So this reduces the burden, okay? You're just typing your own homepage, and you insert attributes inside so that you can then help, say, a web crawler or web search engine that's RDF aware, finding useful information and then also connecting you in the web of data, okay? Does it answer the question? Partly. Of course. Of course, but this is much, much simpler, and this is just, I'd say, the semantic version of microformats. I guess you know about microformats. So still there are some learning necessary, but I guess it's much, much easier.
There will come a time where systems like Siri and Watson will be able to interpret what your sister is writing and be able
right.
to add to this.
Yeah, but it's not yet done completely.
Do we have time for one more?
I think, in interest of grumbling stomachs, maybe we'll move the rest of the questions to the ultimate question period, lunch.
And also, I think if the panelists want, they can stay. And if anybody has questions, you can just come up to the front and we can just keep talking. When we break for lunch, we'll just make a couple quick announcements before lunch. We'll continue.
Yeah. So first, I just want to thank panel three. Really mind-blowing ideas, really makes you think sort of what the real potential is. I hope we continue the conversation over the day. So thank you very much. And we're just going to make a couple quick announcements. You can hold on. Slide operator and moderator. So lunch is now until and it's gonna be downstairs. So just find your way downstairs and you can come up and eat here. There's some space to eat on the top floor of the house, as well as maybe some room in the kitchen, some couches in the kitchen. Just find a place, grab a snack, and we'll meet back in this room at 1 o'clock for the data dive, for the intro to the data dive. So come to this room at 1 o'clock with laptops if you'd like to follow along with the laptop, and we'll have a quick demo, and then we'll break into data dive group, so some people will be going upstairs and some people will remain on this floor, so we'll explain that a little bit later. So 1 o'clock in this room.
So because we're really short on time and trying to squeeze a lot of stuff in, what we want to be able to do is carry the conversation like past today. And one, the way we're trying to do that is through Twitter. So if you tweet something and you include the hashtag of ODX or the @ODX, then we'll get that stuff. So if it's a question, a comment, a link you want to share, we'll get all that. And we'll bring all those things together and we'll put a web page up on our site for the conference so that all that stuff can continue. So if you've got a question you can get to, it'll be there and we can just keep this going because sometimes the conference day ends. And if you're not on Twitter, we just have these pieces of paper. You can write down whatever your comment or question is and just leave it at the front and we'll make sure it gets onto Twitter. So because I'm pretty new to Twitter myself as well. So, you know, if you're not there yet, just write it down. We'll type it out for you and there you go.
So I have a quick pitch. Hopefully everyone is having a great time so far, and that includes all our amazing volunteers. Our volunteers are wearing red lanyards, so if you see anyone wearing a red lanyard, feel free to ask them any question you'd like. Keep it decent. When we planned ODX, when we were planning ODX, we imagined contributing to building the community of users that has been growing for a long time and will hopefully continue to grow after today. And we are joining, you know, inviting everyone here to join the club. And this club has lots of amazing benefits. Of course, events like ODX cost a lot of money to put on. So if you had a good time today and you'd like to become a member of this club, feel free to make a donation, $10 or whatever you can. And you will get this amazing button, specially designed for this conference. And there's a Montreal reference, if anyone can spot it. Yes, and then you can tell your grandkids. You can pass it on generation to generation. So that, thank you very much. And they're going to be at the front table in the hallway, where we're also going to be having a petition to tell Prime Minister Harper to stop muzzling scientists. So someone, actually Jonathan, our live tweeter, who has been doing an amazing job, thank you, all the tweets are amazing, will be at the front desk with the petition as well as the buttons. So please, during lunch, feel free to stop by and say hi. And also, after lunch, NDP MP Charmaine Borg will be saying a couple words about this issue. And I think that's it. One more thing. Steve Reitano, who is with us from Ottawa today, is conducting a survey. Do you want to say a couple words?
Hi, I'm doing a research project for my master's degree. So I've conducted a survey. I have a survey that's online. So I've gotten about 115 responses so far. So later on this afternoon during the deep dive, I'd like to basically conduct a small focus group for the ones that are interested and basically talking a little bit. I'll basically share with you the data that I've collected so far and we can discuss different topics. One topic that I'd like to discuss is should governments get in the business of developing interfaces or just produce raw data? So I'd like to discuss that. So
if you're interested in the focus group, just go talk to Steve, and that'll go on during during the data dive as well.
Yeah. So that's all for the announcements. Et bonne conférence and bon appétit.
See you back at 1:00.